Good evening, everybody. I hope everybody had a wonderful day. As we started discussing last week in the introduction, we're now going to learn Masechta Bikurim. Of course, Shavuos being the Chag Bikurim, it triggers the time where you can bring not only the first fruits of the seven species, the mitzvah of Havas Bikurim, but you can also do the mitzvah of Mikra Bikurim as well. And as we pointed out, you can only do that until Sukkot. From Sukkot until Chanukah, you can bring the Bikurim, but you can no longer recite the Mikra Bikurim because it's not considered a Zman Simcha because it's no longer the Zman HaAsif. And the Pasuk says, V'samachta b'chol hatov, to say the Mikra Bikurim, the recitation, it actually has to be a Zman Simcha. So because there are two different mitzvahs involved here, Havas Bikurim, actually bringing the Bikurim, and Mikra Bikurim, so the Mishnah begins with three permutations. Yesh Mevi'in Bikurin V'Korin, Mevi'in V'lo Korin, V'yeshein and Mevi'im. You have the two extremes. You could either be completely exempted from bringing Bikurim altogether, or you could have an obligation to bring and to recite the special recitation Arami Obed Avi, or theoretically, you could have an obligation to bring, but not an obligation to recite, again, based on things like V'samachta B'chol HaTov, it's not Zman Simcha, or other considerations that we'll get into, things like having a connection to ancestral homelands, because in the Mikra Bikurim it talks about things like Arami Oved Avi, so we'll get into that a little bit later in the Perek. So Elu Sheinan Mevi'in, so the Mishnah starts with the simpler cases, people who don't have to bring it all, and this is all, as the Mishnah is going to explain, based on the Pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, Reishis Bikurei Ad Masecha, Ad Shetehei Kol Agidulin Be'artzecha. That all of the product, all the fruits, has to have grown off of your land. If there's other people's land involved, so that will obviate and exempt you from the mitzvah Bikurim altogether. So let's go through some permutations. Hanotea l'toch shalo, let's say you planted in your land, that's good, but the reason that you would be exempt in this case is hivrich l'soch shal yachid o shal rabim, that you take one of the shoots, to be mavrich is basically to take a shoot which is attached to the main body of the plant itself, and to stick it into the ground in somebody else's property. So there again, kol agidulin is not from your own land. V'chein hamavrich misoch shel yachid o misoch shel rabim misoch shelo. The inverse case, where you plant it in somebody else's area, and then it comes out into your property. Hanotei l'toch shelo v'hivrich l'toch shelo. Now this is a little bit more of a complex case. We're going to see a machlokes here between the chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda and the Rambam's own unique understanding of this machlokes. So in any way, then you plant within your own land, and in fact, the shoots come out within your land as well, but the problem is that there's intervening space. V'derech ha-yachid, v'derech ha-rabim be'emtza. So there's some space in between that's nurturing this plant that was planted in your land, and again, it's coming out of the ground. One of the shoots is coming out of the ground also in your land. But either there's a Rishus HaRabim that intervenes, and again, that's nurturing this particular vegetation, or somebody else's property. So, Hareze Eino Mevi. According to the Chachamim, in such a situation, there's no obligation of Bikurim, because it doesn't meet the definition of Rishis Bikurei Ad Masacha, Adama Shalcha. It has to be your land. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kazem Mevi. Rabbi Yehuda says you would actually have an obligation to bring, but listen to the words, Kazem Mevi. He doesn't say kazeh kore. You wouldn't actually recite the mikra bikurim. So does he mean in both situations, where there's an intervening rishus harabim and rishus hayachid, or maybe just one of the two? So in the Yerushalmi, it sounds a lot like that it's only the rishus harabim, because Rabbi Yehuda is of the view, and this is discussed in the Gemara Bava Basra, are you allowed to dig underneath the rishus harabim if it doesn't bother anybody? And it was Rabbi Yehuda's view that this is actually not a problem. So even though you don't own the Rishus HaRabim, he says nobody else's land is really getting in the way. If there was some third party's land getting in the way, that would represent a problem in terms of Rishus Bikurei Ad Mascha. But this is just a Rishus HaRabim. And if you're technically allowed to dig underneath it, that would not be a problem. Now, it's interesting. The Rambam takes the inverse case, and he says even the Chachamim would agree that where there's a third-party land, there's land of a Yachid, which is intervening, but he gave you Rishus to use that area, so you're going to plant in your land, and then it's going to come out on the other side of the road on your land, and this other person has property in between, but he says, it's okay with me if you want to plant in that way. The Rambam thinks there would be an obligation of Bikurim, because even though, again, it's not technically speaking, Bikurei Ad Masecha, Kol HaGidulin Me'artzecha, the Rishus, the Rambam says, this is, I think, something of a Chiddush, based on the Yerushalmi, the Rambam says, the fact that this third party gave you Rishus is sufficient to generate an obligation, even according to the Chachamim, in that case. What's animating this entire Mishnah, says the second Mishnah, Bikurim, Mishim Shenema, Rishus, Bikurim, Ad Mascha, Ad Sheyehu Kol Agidulin Me'ad Mascha. It has to be that all of the nurturing and all the nutrients are being derived from your land, so it's not enough to plant in your land or that the shoots would come out in your land, but everything really has to be on your land. And speaking of land ownership, that will create an exemption in all of the following four cases. Ha'arisin, sharecroppers or tenant farmers, people who basically don't own the land, but they work for a percentage. So they say, oh, we're going to take 25% of the crop, 30% of the crop, whatever it is, but they're not really the landowner. They have no obligation to be kurim. Ha'chakuros, chakuros are risk-averse sharecroppers. They're people that say, we don't want percentages because we don't know what's going to come out this year, so we're going to work the land for this number of bushels, no matter, you know, what exactly the land yields. So that's the people who have a little bit lower tolerance for risk, so they become not a recent chakuros. Sikrikon. Sikrikon is a machokes between the Bar Tanura and the Rambam. The Rambam says, sikrikon are people who seize land from other people, pay really less than it's worth, and they bully other people into getting their property, so they're not really considered, halachically speaking, full owners of land. That's the Rambam's definition. The Bar Tanura has a different definition, which is based on a notrikon, meaning that there's an abbreviation. Sikrikon means sa karka v'hanicheni, very complicated case, but the gist of it is that somebody's coming to kill you, and you say, don't kill me, just take my land. So that person doesn't really have a kin in the land, because the reason that he got your land is that you were trying not to die, and, you know, the idea is that you would come back the next day or the next year and, you know, bring him to court and say, yeah, the reason I gave him my land was that I was, you know, I was choosing survival. So sikrikon, again, is somebody who doesn't really have a kin in the land, v'hagazlan, and somebody who steals land altogether. There's a little bit of a discussion here. What if there's yush? So we know that in general there's a kinyan for a gazlan. Somebody who steals something technically does become its owner. The Rav used to like to explain, because that way the Torah could say, if you're the owner, you're responsible in terms of something happening to make restitution. So we know v'heshev esagzela asher gazal, there's always a mitzvah to return something that you stole, but in the meantime you theoretically could be the owner. So there are some who would suggest that this Mishnah is only suggesting prior to yush. If the Bailim don't actually despair, then you would have then if the Bailim do despair, then according to some, you would have an obligation to bring Bikurim from stolen land. But the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says, even if the Bailim had Yush, even if they despaired of ever getting their land back, if you acquired land through Gzela, then you can't possibly bring Bikurim from that land. Maybe because it's a problem of mitzvah haba be'avera, maybe it's a din of karka ein and nigzela. So different ways of looking at that issue. But hagazlan ein mevi en me'oso atam, mishum shenemar rishish bikurim masecha. So again, the provision of land ownership establishes two things. Not only you have to be the owner of the land, you have to be the owner of the entirety of the land, which are some of the cases that we dealt with at the beginning, and that's also the exemption for tenant farmers and for sharecroppers, and you know, people who obtain land through ill-gotten means, either through stealing it, through bullying it, by taking it instead of, you know, killing somebody. All of these people are outside of the realm of the mitzvah of havas, bikurim, all together.